monster.
Remember this Christmas, as every Christmas, every woman alive wants Chanel No. 5. And I want to tell you, this is Monitor, where you'll hear about uninvited visitors, a new look at flying saucers by biologist Ivan Sanderson. Of course, flying saucers have been formalized with the name UFOs, but a flying saucer by any other name is still a mystery. I'm your host, Ted Steele, introducing Herb Alpert's latest, a swinging version of the Habanera from Carmen. In the past 20 years, there have been thousands of reports of UFOs, unidentified flying objects. In direct proportion to the number of reports has been the number of books written on the subject. One of the latest is titled Uninvited Visitors, but this is written by an unusual man, Ivan Sanderson, biologist, geologist, and zoologist. Mr. Sanderson, much has been written on the subject of UFOs, but I'm willing to bet that your theories and explanation are unique. How are they different from previous suggestions?
I think it is a biological problem, insofar as follows. Could we clear away, first of all, this ridiculous expression, UFOs? They used to be called Flying saucers,
mm-hmm.
which is even more ridiculous because, first of all, they don't fly. Secondly, we've never seen one shaped like a saucer. There have been a lot of them alleged to have been like two saucers, one turned on top of the other, you know? And UFO became the United States Air Force expression, unidentified flying objects. Well, as I say, they don't fly. The best expression I've ever heard from them was coined, oh my, when I first got mixed up in this in 1928.
Does it go back that far, Evan?
You read the Bible, sir?
Yes.
Yes, well, Ezekiel's wheel,
mm-hmm.
Isaiah's fiery chariot. They are now called by the Air Force and the Pentagon UAOs, which is unexplained aerial objects, or UAPs, which are unidentified aerial phenomena.
Ivan Sanderson, the Air Force has investigated, oh, I guess more than 9,000, excuse me, UFOs. Only a few hundred or more are still unidentified. Now, do you think this is a significant number to be anything serious or dangerous?
It's totally inaccurate, first of all. The Air Force has examined a great number more than that, and the proportion of those which have not yet been definitely identified as something we do know is the actual basic figure is a great deal larger. Now, that's only the USAF.
Hmm.
If you go to the Brazilians, the Chileans, the Bolivians, the British, the Swedes, the French, the Indonesians, the Japanese, the Indians, the Danes, and so on down the line, there's thousands more have been recorded.
Probably hundreds of thousands.
Oh, it's in well up in the hundreds of thousands. This is without the historical past prior to 1947 when the United States of America got excited in it.
Ivan, since you're so deep in this area, people claim to have had contact with beings from space now. Is there any proof of any of the contacts? How do you feel about that?
Proof. Proof is a very hard word. But in my book, I give what facts have been published by scientists. The scientists of stature, such as Dr. Carl Sagan of Harvard, who is our greatest exobiologist, who last year published a book with the leading Russian exobiologist on the possibility of there being intelligent life, not only just life, but intelligent life elsewhere in the universe and having visited us.
Maybe we could get a couple examples, possibly from your experience, Ivan.
Well, it would take about 2.5 hours to explain any one, but the first one was my wife and I saw in the Delaware Water Gap where we live. We live just on the Jersey side. It's about 80 miles due west of New York. We saw this enormous thing skipping around. It went in front of a television relay station on the left-hand side of it, and the right-hand side was in the Delaware Water Gap over a little bump that's at the bottom. We knew exactly, within almost a foot, where we were on the coast and geodetic survey, and when we worked out the size of this thing, it turned out to be 1/3 of a mile in width. And it looked, the only way I can describe it is that it looked like a kite, an enormous kite on the end of a string in a hurricane. It sort of flip, 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 flip. Sometimes it was straight on, chew, and looked like a dime anyhow, an old dime, that's just about that color. And it was in the evening, the sun had not yet set, and it just looked like a line. Then suddenly it became a complete circle. Then as it turned slightly, it looked like an oval, and then it looked like a lenticel or a lens. That's one. Another one, when my assistant and I were driving back from picking up some puppies from the vets, we saw this incredible red light in the sky, stationary, just after dark. And we naturally thought at first that it was an airplane or something. And then Mike, my assistant, yelled to me, what the blank blank is that? And we stopped the car and we jumped out, and this red light split into two red lights. And it made, Ted, not only instant stops and starts, but 90-degree turns. Just like a square, you know, like you take a ruler and you go whoop and then turn to the right. It also reversed itself, which is 180 degrees. And it went behind the Blue Ridge Mountains and back on our side in front of the mountains. And it was far bigger than any tail light on any plane that I've ever seen. It was a round ball of brilliant red light. Also, it went white when it made the turns. And it jumped over the mountains and back again, just like the one we saw in daylight in a matter of fractions of a second. The third one we saw last year, but I won't go into that. It came sailing out from behind my house in brilliant moonlight. Took 22 minutes to cross the sky. And luckily, there were four of us who witnessed it. Unbiased witnesses from all walks of life.
Ivan Sanderson, author of a new book, Uninvited Visitors. A biologist looks at UFO, has been our guest. Mr. Anderson, you're an invited visitor on Monitor anytime.
God bless you. Thank you so much. By Edie Gourmet, How Could I Be So Wrong? The right time, 21 minutes past the hour, on the Monitor Beacon. It's the biggest show on earth, mornings from 5 to 9. The big time, and that's not just big talk, is music, news, and conversation on the Big Wilson Show, Monday through Saturday mornings from 5 to 9 on WNBC. Join me, will you? We'll have more fun than a three-ring circus. No one chooses to be poor and in need, but many people today find themselves in this situation. The men and women of the Salvation Army stand ready to help, especially at Christmas time. You can help bring comfort and cheer to a less fortunate family. Support the Salvation Army's Christmas effort by sending a generous contribution to the Salvation Army, 546 6th Avenue, New York, New York, 10011. You'll make someone happy this year if you do. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York. Monitor with this advice. Remember, this Christmas, as every Christmas, every woman alive wants Chanel No. 5. Here's Monitor on stage. Star performances recorded live at leading theaters and nightclubs all across the country. Here's comic Flip Wilson, rewriting ancient history.
I used to think that I wanted to be a singer. You know, I used to think I wanted to be a singer when I noticed the singers got all the girls. You know, girls like those singers. They come out with their shiny suits, and they lean over the front of the stage and sing to the girls. You ever watch those guys? It's been that way all through history, even back during the time of the first great singer. First great singer musician. Well, it was Little David. Remember Little David? He had the fight with Goliath? I bet Goliath remembers David. That's why the fight came about. Because Goliath was jealous about the popularity that David had with the girls. See, David wasn't a singer. Fade harp, he'd sing. And wherever David would be appearing, all the girls would come in the club and they'd crowd around the front of the stage and scream at David. They'd scream things like,
"Down the harp, Little David! Down the harp, honey! What you say? Go on, Little David!"
Yeah, David was something like the Ray Charles of that time. In fact, David's group was so popular, they did a world tour. World tour! In those days, the entire known world was about the size of Vermont. Most of the fellas stood around on the corners and said, "Small world, ain't it?" When he returned from the world tour, David's group got a job working on the boat rides on Saturday. Noah had a boat. Noah would give boat rides. The boat would be crowded. Secret of the crowds would be Noah's advertising. Noah believed in strong advertising. The week before the ride, he'd put placards up all over town. And the placards would say, "Boat ride Saturday. It's gonna rain." People see that it's gonna rain and buy those tickets and get on that boat. Business was booming on the boat, too. Noah's making money. David's group's working. Then Noah went off his cookie. Started bringing animals on the boat. And the word got around town. Pretty soon, all the fellas start saying, "I'm not going on that boat. He's bringing animals on the boat. I'm not going to pay $3 and go on there with an animal. I was on there with a pig last week." So they all started hanging out in a little jazz club. A place called Lazarus Bar. Lazarus Bar was right across from the arena. And in those days, on Sunday, everyone went to the arena so they could watch the Christians and the Lions. Those Lions were undefeated. One Sunday, everyone leaves the arena. They go over to Lazarus' place. David's group's on the bandstand. He's playing his big hit, Rock of Ages. That was a big hit for David. David made a lot of money from that record. His girlfriend, Bathsheba, standing near the stage screaming,
"Play on the harp, Little David! Play on that harp, honey!
What you say? Go, Little David!" Goliath came in with his gang. Goliath had a gang called the Philistines. They had leather jackets with their names on the back, football helmets, and they drink a lot of beer. They had motorcycle helmets. That's right, motorcycle helmets. No motorcycle, just a helmet. And Goliath started heckling David. And he comes up, he starts yelling, "Sing happy birthday, Little David! Sing happy birthday!" David said, "Knock it off, Goliath. Man, I'm trying to do a show. These people paid their money. They want to see a show. Now, knock that off. I'll go get the police." And Goliath said, "You going to get mad because I asked you to sing a little old jive happy birthday for me and the Philistines? If I'd have slipped you $5, you'd have sung it." David said, "I'm going to get the police." When David turned his back to go toward the door, Goliath grabbed a club. He's running up behind David. He's going to hit him with that club. Bathsheba saw this, and she screamed to warn David. She yelled,
"Watch out, David! You better watch out, David! I'm telling you now, he's running up behind you, and he got a club. He's gonna hit you. Try to tear your head off."
David whirled around the slingshot. Zap! Gave Goliath a zap with a rock right between the eyes. And Goliath fell and died. And all the people started laughing because David leaned over and said, "Happy birthday. Happy birthday."
Yeah, comedian Flip Wilson for Monitor on Stage.
Has this ever happened to you?
Oh, you just can't wait to get out of the city and into the wonderful, clean, fresh country. The picnic lunch is your girl's responsibility. Your job, get to her house on time. Okay, you both pile into the car. Picnic lunch, check. Thermos, check. Cigarettes, check. You're off. And you finally get there. You jump out of the car, take the cigarette out of your mouth. Oh, you grin, and you take that first big breath of sweet country air.
Are there any other reasons not to smoke cigarettes? Ask your American Cancer Society.
Baltimore and Ohio Marching Band with Lapland. You heard it all across the country on Monitor. In the southeastern section of Tennessee, you're listening to WBEF Chattanooga. All the NBC stations get a word in edgewise here, and then I'll be back. I'm your Monitor host, Ted Steele.
This is Barbara Walters. I'll be with you each weekday with my emphasis, What's New, on NBC Radio.
Ted Steele here with Monitor on December 2nd. And this week, a new Eisenhower-Nixon ticket was announced. David Eisenhower, grandson of former President Eisenhower, and Julie Nixon, daughter of former Vice President Nixon. And, of course, the ticket will be a marriage license. And they'll be running to the altar in about 1970 when they finish college. The Democrats are not going to campaign against them. Petula Clark sings, "The other man's grass is always greener."
Life is never what it seems. We're always searching in our dreams to find that little answer in the air. When worry starts to cloud the mind, it's hard to leave it all behind and just pretend you haven't got a care. Someone else in your imagination, you wish that you were standing in their shoes. You change your life without much hesitation.
Highway Safety Director William Haddon Jr. made news this week by saying that a soldier in Vietnam has a better chance of surviving injury than an American civilian on the highway. That statement was made at a national conference of women community leaders for highway safety. Paul Duke, NBC News Washington, interviewed Dr. Haddon about the current status of automobile safety.
Dr. Haddon, what do you think the big things that have been done to make cars safer?
Well, in the first place, the new cars, as of January, and many anticipate this, are required to meet a number of standards which we have issued, the department has issued under the Traffic Safety Act of 66. Especially important are three things. First of all, the energy-absorbing steering assemblies, which came on to several makes during the past year, and which change a situation in which there is a spear pointed at the chest to a situation in which there is what amounts to a fire net, a cushioning device ahead of the chest. and preliminary research evidence suggests that these are reducing the likelihood of injury and given grades of injury and death by some 70 to 80% in major front-end crashes. Similarly, we've required for all cars for January a new kind of windshield, laminated windshield, in other words, well before much of the safety controversy and on the basis of several years of research. The findings with respect to these are in the same ballpark, about a 70 or 80% reduction. They appear to be substantially reducing the chance of decapitation as a result of the head going through and then being locked with jagged glass around the neck. Another important feature, of course, an essential feature, is the provision in all passenger positions of either lap or combination lap and upper torso belts. Again, if people would use these, have the sense to use these, particularly in local driving where most of the accidents take place, contrary to popular opinion, where most of the deaths and injuries take place, there would be a tremendous reduction in fatalities and injuries in the United States.
Looking ahead 10 years, say, what kind of additional safety features can we expect in automobiles?
First of all, the problem which has bedeviled car designers and producers since it was first identified, at least about 12 years ago, of doors opening in crashes and spilling people out to their deaths frequently or to be rolled over on to be crushed and so forth, will be solved. We'll begin to see engineering solutions which do even better than the recent solutions, which are quite good. You will also see much better restraint systems, that is, safety belts, for example, which are convenient to use, which allow you complete freedom of movement, but which lock on sudden deceleration. These are already well out of the experimental stage and should appear within a year or two. You'll also see much better aids to the driver to keep him out of trouble in the first place, and better braking systems, fuel tanks that are less prone to rupture, something that we're already requiring as a first step under our standards as well. There are many other aspects, but I think these are the important ones.
All the major automobile companies have announced hefty price increases in the new model cars, and they're attributing part of the increase to the added safety features. Do you think this is warranted?
It may well be that some of the future safety features will cost money, but compared with the loss in life and the disabilities being produced, we think that these costs are quite trivial. To give you a quick example, if I may, we are losing over 10,000 people injured, 10,000 casualties a day in the United States. Per week, we average over 1,000 dead. Per month, are averaging close to $1 billion worth of property and damage and other identifiable costs. And per year, of course, to cite another example, we have over 8 million people days spent in hospitals. This is a fearsome price to pay compared with small increments in vehicle costs that this might involve.
Thank you very much, Dr. Haddon. We've been talking with Dr. William Haddon, director of the new Federal Traffic Safety Agency. This is Paul Duke for Monitor in Washington.
The continuing problem of automobile safety, a problem easier to solve, your gift list.
Oh,
Martino. At 14 minutes before the hour, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Now, it's The Happiest Millionaire, another masterful musical motion picture from Walt Disney. Starring Fred McMurray, Tommy Steele, Greer Garson, Geraldine Page, and introducing Leslie Ann Warren and John Davidson. Brilliant cast, story that sparkles with warmth and humor. 11 new hit songs. See Walt Disney's The Happiest Millionaire.
It's the Happy Christmas Holiday Show on now at the Radio City Music Hall. On the screen, Walt Disney's The Happiest Millionaire. The musical event of the year starring Fred McMurray, Tommy Steele, Greer Garson, and Geraldine Page. And on the great stage, The Nativity, far-famed pageant of the first Christmas, plus Cheers, a festive package of holiday fun with the ballet company, the symphony orchestra, and the world-renowned Rockettes. The Happiest Millionaire and the Great Christmas Show is now at the Radio City Music Hall. The Conversation Station, WNBC, New York.
Monitor with a song by that new Scottish lass, Lulu. Only 19, she began singing at the age of 14. But then her name was Marie McDonald McLaughlin Laurie. Here's her new song, Best of Both Worlds.
Best of both worlds, that's what he wants. All your way, that's not my way. I won't share you, I couldn't bear to. It's time for you to choose which love you'd rather lose. Could you love her? Forget me, are you sorry that you've met me? What we've been through means nothing to you. I can't satisfy you.
Joyce Brothers next in her series all about people. This time, people who are, well, shall we say, larger than life. Overweight. Here is Dr. Brothers.
Remember the song that went, "You can have her, I don't want her, she's too fat for me." Well, if someone offers you a doll or a guy on that basis, take him up on it. Chances are you'll be enjoying a fine romance or even marriage while he's still looking for the ideal figure. In his many studies of human physiques and psyches, Dr. William Sheldon has found that people come in a wide variety of body builds, each of which is a combination of three basic types. In turn, each of these basic forms has a corresponding psychological pattern. The sylph-like figure that is our feminine ideal today is the type Dr. Sheldon labels predominantly ectomorphic. She stays thin because she burns a lot of nervous energy, nervously. For all her many excellent qualities, she's apt to be as skittish and high-strung as a racehorse. And unless you have a bit of racehorse blood, too, you're apt to find yourself still at the starting gate while she's run twice around the track. Our male ideal is the mesomorph, brawny and muscled, physically tireless but quickly bored. He's handsome to look at when his motion is slow enough that you can see him, but he often makes an unreliable fireside companion. He can't sit still long and prefers the perils of the great outdoors to the pleasures of hearth and family. Quite the opposite is the soft, round, fat person Dr. Sheldon labeled an endomorph. He or she is cuddly, with a fine textured skin and a slow-moving grace. The endomorph loves to curl up by a fire and will sit there indefinitely, enjoying the warmth, as contented as a cat. You don't have to chase an endomorph or wonder where he's run to. You'll always find him at a fireside, where there's good company, pleasant surroundings, and gourmet food. He thoroughly enjoys these things. If you stick around, you can enjoy them with him. The endomorph is warm and outgoing, likes to stroke and be stroked. He, or she, is an excellent cook and conversationalist, and most of all, a quiet and understanding listener, the kind you can tell your troubles to. This is not the type you take out on the ski slopes, but this is the type who won't mind lolling around the ski lodge waiting for you to come in out of the cold. The endomorph will be waiting for you with warm slippers and a hot toddy, and whatever else you need to make you comfortable. Endomorphs know all about comfort. Comfort is their middle name. So if you want to live a long life and a comfortable one, laced with good care and spiced with good cheer, don't let that plump guy or gal get away. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
Dr. Joyce Brothers, herself a mesomorph, is heard every weekend on Monitor. I don't know what kind of a morph Dean Martin is, but he's a good singer. Here's In the Misty Moonlight.
In the misty moonlight, by the fragrant firelight, any place is all right, long as I'm with you. In a faraway land, on a tropic seaside, if your hand's in my hand, I won't be blue. Way up on the mountain, way down in the valley, I know I'll be happy any place, anywhere. I don't care. In the misty moonlight,
shopper this Christmas, as every Christmas, every woman alive wants Chanel No. 5. Tomorrow afternoon on Monitor, you'll hear an interview with Mrs. James Robb, the mother of the groom. What groom? Well, Charles Robb, the Marine captain who will be married to Linda Bird Johnson next Saturday. Mrs. Robb will talk about the meetings they've had with President and Mrs. Johnson, and she'll tell what kind of a boy her son was as a child. Captain Robb will be glad to know that no baby pictures will be shown. Isn't radio wonderful, huh? That's just one highlight of tomorrow afternoon's edition of Monitor with host Henry Morgan. Also heard from will be Bob Considine, Frank Blair, Kyle Rote, Mel Allen, and Joe Garagiola. Make it a date. A new one by King Richard's Flugelknights, their version of Camelot. NBC News on the Hour is next, and then there'll be more of Monitor. I'm Ted Steele.
Keep tuned, the latest news now is on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now from everywhere.